Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 21st of December. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. We're recording shows for the entire week. Last will be on the 24th of December, and then we are back live on 10th of January. This show was recorded last Monday, 13th of December. We're chatting with Jimmy Moyaha, talking trends of 2021, going to touch on Sasol, and then Christy Fullerton, an economist at PwC.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. This 2021, it's been a good year for investors. It's been an even better year for stock pickers. There certainly have been a number of stocks that have done some fairly spectacular returns, and some to the downside, but it was more than anything. It's been those really positive returns. One that stood out for you, which you were wanting to dig more into, was Sasol, which, and I've got to zoom my chart out here, because this was, a 20-odd rand share at some point last year, and really has had a spectacular recovery.
Morning, Simon. Absolutely. I mean, Sasol, even at 20 Rand, I had people in my life asking me questions around what my thoughts were on Sasol, and then the only thing I could see at 20 Rand was buy the share. Just keep buying until you have no more money to buy the share. Mm-hmm. And those that did, I mean, definitely saw the benefit. I mean, we've got some movers that MTN did astoundingly well this year. They're the best performing stock in South Africa. I think they're up some 160-odd%. But Sasol as well, more than 100% gain for the year. So it's definitely a stock that if someone bought and held on to, as we saw that reversal of the oil prices and the commodities pricing start to stabilize, and then we then saw the commodities super cycle happen in South Africa and throughout the world as well, we definitely did see a rebound in Sasol, and that was one of the most impressive rebounds that we've seen amongst the stocks, particularly given how low it was. But we did expect it. I mean, this was a stock that had a big Lake Charles project happening in the US. They had big plans to diversify into chemicals and diversify their revenues away from oil reliance, and they've successfully been able to do some of those things. So it's definitely one of the stocks that for me performed exceptionally well throughout the year. I remember giving an outlook on Sasol back in March, saying that any dips that you see on Sasol, go in on the dips, buy those dips. And I mean, Sasol's reached over 300 Rand this year alone. So it's still away from all-time highs where we've seen it, but it's definitely back on the right track.
Yeah, and I think many of us forget that, you know, this time last year, Sasol was talking about a potential $2 billion rights issue. It would have been the biggest rights issue in the JSE by a long way. And super credit to management. I mean, they were selling assets and they sold some of the Lake Charles and the like, but they avoided that rights issue, which I mean, you know, a management team that we were deriding because of their Lake Charles disaster really pulled a rabbit out the hat with that one.
Absolutely. And that's not just Sasol. I mean, that was also, that's a trend. I mean, if you look at 2020, it was sort of a tale of two halves, with the first half of the year being really difficult, the second half trying to sort of find our feet again. But 2021 was a completely different year. That was a tale of multiple chess games. If you looked at the companies that were involved, companies that had big balance sheets were buying, companies that had loss-making assets were selling off. Everybody was playing their own little chess game to restructure and reoptimize their business within the resources that they had. I mean, we saw Standard Bank push on with the Liberty deal. We saw Mr. Price finish off the Yuppie Chef acquisition. We saw companies talk about delistings. We saw the telecoms guys talk about listing their towers businesses to free up revenue for spectrum. Everybody was playing their own little chess game based on where they want to now realign and reshift and refocus their businesses. And Sasol did exactly the same thing. So I think it was just one of the growing trends we saw, not just locally, but internationally as well, across all of the businesses, across all of the equities. I mean, we saw all-time highs in equity markets this year, and a lot of that was down to careful restructurings, careful mergers and acquisitions, and those sorts of things.
You mentioned MTN earlier in terms of another stock that's had a spectacular year, and another stock which really has got a management team very different to the one back in 2015 when the Nigerian regulators threw a, what, a $5.5 billion a fine at them. We're seeing Vodacom sort of change their game a bit. They're getting the Egypt assets. They're getting a bit more growth into their business. Is MTN still the preferred, though? I mean, with the risks, it operates in some sort of riskier markets, perhaps, but is it still the preferred?
At the moment, if I'm honest, I mean, MTN has done astoundingly well. They've performed a lot better than expected. And I mean, coming from what you mentioned, Simon, around the fines that Nigeria might have, mm-hmm. that Nigeria had imposed on them, they've since gotten a banking license in Nigeria.
Yeah.
So they've really turned that around. And you somewhat feel that guys like Vodacom and your telecoms and your cell phones and that sort of thing might be lagging in certain areas. But we did see Vodacom make their own strides. I mean, MTN decided to go big into Nigeria on the non-banked side of things and the unbanked population. And Vodacom did the exact same thing in Morocco. They went into Morocco. They're going into Egypt as well. And Egypt is, as we know at the moment, Egypt is the fastest growing African economy. So you've literally got both telecommunication providers saying, we understand where our next leg of income or next leg of significant revenue is going to come from, and we're going to realign and optimize our businesses to target that. MTN's doing it in Nigeria, Vodacom's going to do it in Egypt, and we might very well see Telkom start to do it throughout the lower southern African region if they can get their expansion plans in order for that. We've definitely seen that shift from a telecoms provider's perspective to be less reliant on sort of your airtime revenues or your voice revenues. And there's been a greater shift to fiber, to data revenues, to infrastructure-based revenues. And that's just been a growing trend amongst all of the South African telecoms providers.
Yeah, and that Egyptian market, 100 million people and a massive unbanked market. And it has been. I like your point around that. The telco, I always thought the telcos needed to become more than just utilities. They needed to become something else. And they've tried streaming and video and stuff. And we've seen it with M-Pesa in East Africa. Banking probably is going to be a significant part of telco futures, not just in Africa, but probably across the world.
Absolutely. I mean, you've seen the rise of challenger banks. You've seen the rise of neo banks. You're now looking at guys like Time Bank into the Philippines. Your growing trend is financial services and the financial space and the digital financial space. So the traditional model of finance and banking and that sort of thing isn't necessarily relevant anymore. I wouldn't say irrelevant, but it's slowly losing its control over the market. If you look at Nigeria and you look at the rest of Africa, we've also seen unicorn companies come up in this year, and all of those have been in the financial space, in the tech space, in the fintech space. So your growing trend around that, the financial servicing space, particularly where it relates to unbanked Africa, is massive.
Yeah, and we were talking crypto yesterday. It plays into it. But there is this. I mean, finance, which has been boring for 100 years, is suddenly becoming exciting. We will leave that there. Jimmy, as always, appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Starting now with Christy Falloon. He's an economist at PwC. Christy, I appreciate the early morning. It's been a tough year for South Africa this year. We've had out some GDP data, a negative quarter for Q3. If we look forward more to next year, my sense is that we've had a really strong bounce in 2021. That is predominantly base effect. What are you and your colleagues looking for as we look into the next couple of years?
Yes, definitely some base effects. And what that basically means is that because we had such a big recession last year, you're always going to see some growth this year simply because when things sort of get back to normal, it looks better compared to 2020. So there's a part of this economic growth in 2021 that's been actual growth. We know that, for example, mining exports has been doing very well, but we also know that lots of industries are still struggling. So it doesn't mean that we are back on a sustainable, very fast growth track. And that means that when we look at 2022, we see most economic growth forecasts declining again, looking less optimistic, because we're now sort of moving back to a situation where we are facing the normal struggles that we've always had before COVID, the normal challenges to growth and the normal employment growth, which then pulls us back down to slower economic growth.
Yeah, and it can quickly touch on mining. Mining certainly has been great for us this year, to a degree also last year towards the tail end, because of those booming commodity prices. As a country, we like it. We'll take it with both hands. But of course, that disappears as quickly as it comes. And whether it'll last through next year, time will tell. But it's not something which is sustainable, which we can kind of bank on as a country. And certainly our national treasury can't either.
Most definitely. So we know since about August, September last year, mining has been the shining beacon of our economic growth. Exports have been supported by strong commodity prices, strong physical demand from across the world for the things that we produce in our mines. So that's great news. We've seen extra tax coming in. Government has been very happy with that. But as the finance minister also warned, this is not sustainable. There's no guarantee that it'll keep going on in 2022. So we're grabbing it with both hands. But as I said, it's sort of once we look past this positive news, we realize that we're battling the normal fundamentals again. We're looking at things like load shedding, which is probably in 2022 going to be our biggest economic challenge again, with the worst of COVID behind us. We're sitting with a situation where electricity is not reliable. You don't know when load shedding is going to happen. You don't know how long it's going to happen, how deep it's going to be. It's one of those you can't predict it. You sort of just need to have it as part of your normal business plan, which is actually just quite terrible to live with. You basically have to plan for electricity outages could happen every day, any day. And that's going to be, I think, our biggest challenge going into next year, is just the impact that this unreliability has on normal business operations, the ability to not only create jobs, but just retain jobs, the ability for small businesses in particular to just keep going. That's going to be our biggest issue as we try and roll back this negative impact of COVID and get back the jobs that we've lost.
Yeah, it's certainty. You know, if Eskom said, look, Mondays, you know, no power on Mondays, we could work with that certainty. It's when you think you got power and suddenly there's that, the lights go out. And the Eskom, we've also got, you know, up to, 130 billion ZAR in terms of foreign funding for the just transition, which seems like a great on the surface, but there's still challenges with that. Firstly, is it enough? Can Eskom afford it? Do they have the capacity to actually implement it?
Yes, I mean, that's a lot of money. Recently, we were told 130 billion rand from rich countries coming our way so that we can change our energy mix towards more greener energies and less reliance on coal. But if you look at the details behind it, it's not a gift. It's not cash. It's actually low-cost loans. They're making money available to Eskom to implement this kind of a green transformation. We know that Eskom is already overburdened with debt. So for Eskom to assume or to take up this opportunity, they would need to get rid of some of their other debt. They've been talking to government for about 2-3 years now to see if government can't take over some of their debt, and there's been very little progress. So that's our biggest obstacle. We've got this opportunity, but we've got a power utility that's already overburdened with debt. So the money is available, but only if Eskom can afford to take it on. We saw last week that they're asking for another 20% increase in electricity costs. Imagine what that would look like if they suddenly had to pay all of that extra debt off as well. So in the current situation, I don't think it's very likely that unless there's an amazing solution on the table coming on the 25th of December with a guy with a red suit on, maybe, then it's going to be very, very, very challenging for them to take on this money and move us towards this more greener energy situation.
You also a presentation put out by you and your team, South African Economic Outlook. It was a November, December one. You talk about unprecedented fiscal spending cuts planned for 2022, 2023. Treasury, National Treasury unwinds fiscal stimulus. You made the point earlier that we came into the pandemic in a really, really tough space as an economy, as a country. And there are going to be some hard decisions made in the next couple of budgets.
Most definitely. The medium-term budget that we got last month was full of good news because we saw that big tax windfall that the mining helped us get. We also saw some better fiscal and creations because of the rebasing of the GDP numbers. So overall, that medium-term budget looked good. But it couldn't take away from the fact that we've got a massive fiscal deficit and it needs to get significantly smaller in the next few years. And what the finance minister said was he's going to cut spending next year. Now, we know spending was actually increased this year because we had that extra tax. So he's physically going to reduce spending in the 2022 fiscal year, which is actually the first time in probably about 30 years that we've seen from one fiscal year to the next the amount of rands being spent by government being reduced. So that gives you a signal of where this finance minister is at the moment in terms of his thinking, how do we fix the situation, but also how constrained it is with where the money is going to come from. The Treasury is looking at very conservative economic growth numbers for next year, maybe partly because they're thinking this mining boom can't last forever. So they're planning for low economic growth, which then actually translates into limited tax revenue growth. And they've decided, let's rather reduce spending. It's not much. I mean, it's like 2%. Sure. It's not a massive amount. But the point is that to bring down this deficit and to get our debt to stabilize, they're actually planning to reduce fiscal spending. So as an economist looking to get these numbers and these ratios in a better situation so that one day we can maybe get back to an investment grade sovereign rating, that's actually good news. It's a right move, and it continues with where his predecessor left off, was trying to get this fiscal situation much more sustainable.
Last question, inflation and interest rates. We've seen inflation running very hot in the US. In South Africa, it's been ticking up. It's still within the band. Our MPC have raised rates 0.25%. What are your expectations? More interest rate increases next year?
Look, all the signals from the Reserve Bank says interest rates are going to continue going up. The key here, I think, to emphasize is that it's not going to be very fast, not going to be a lot at the same time. We saw a big drop in interest rates last year as the central bank tries to give us some stimulus for this economy. So they're going to have to roll that back eventually. So that's about 3 percentage points that it needs to go up. But it's going to happen probably over a period of at least 3 years, if not more. So the Reserve Bank has made it clear interest rates are going up next year, probably 3, 4, maybe 5 times by this small increment, because they have to get back to normal, because we have to return to a situation to where we were before COVID. So, yes, that's the clear signal. It's a slow upward trek, but it's going to happen. It could happen as soon as January again, that they make the upward adjustment. As they always say, it depends on the data. If inflation looks worse, they might do it quicker. If inflation looks better, they might do it slower. It all depends on how the numbers come out. And then they meet every 2 months to make this decision on the interest rate.
Gotcha. So inflation might drive the speed, but the plan is ultimately to get back to those pre-COVID levels, because we had, I think it was 3 full percent cuts last year as the pandemic was raging. We'll leave it there. Kristy Fulon, economist at PwC, appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. We're publishing recorded shows every day up until Friday, the 24th, which is Christmas Eve. And then we'll be back with our live shows on Monday, 10th of January. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. And thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchli, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.